This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oh, good afternoon there, Mike.
Good afternoon there, sir.
Well, we got 91 degrees.
Yeah, says. In here. It's 117 in the parking lot.
In the parking lot. Well, I think I'll just stay in here then.
Yeah, we'll stay in here. You know, 91's a whole lot cooler. No, it's actually, I don't know where your thermometer is or whatever your temperature.
Oh, at the Roseburg Regional Airport.
Oh, that's where you're reading this from. Ah. Well, in your parking lot, right out the back door,
yeah.
It's a little bit warmer.
Is it?
Yes, I think it was 93.
When I parked my truck.
Yeah. So.
Anyway. Summer in the city.
Yeah, summer in the city. Isn't it great? Yeah, bah humbug.
I like it.
You know, unless I'm by a swimming pool or an ocean, I don't like 94.
No?
No.
Well, I wouldn't either, I guess, if I had to work in it.
That's true. I'd stand around in it and soak up that wonderful sunshine.
Mm.
Anyway, this is an educational show, believe it or not. I know sometimes it's hard to believe when we start, but it is. I'm going to talk about plants. I'm going to talk about different types of plants and watering because it's hot, the heat of summer on upon us now. And talk about some plants that you could plant safely now because they're heat tolerant. In other words, they don't mind it a bit. And it's just information, and hopefully it will help somebody out there. And I thank you for listening. And if you have a call, if you have a question, 673-4464, and we'll get you right in here. You can ask your question, and I will give you an answer. And 99.9% of the time, it's correct. And I can make it 100% if I actually am standing on the location you're talking about and looking at the plant that you might be telling me about. So, at any rate, I'm going to talk about watering in this hot sun. And planting in this hot sun, because some people just continue to plant, so hey, you might as well have some good information. And what I'm about to say, though, does not relate to potted plants, because potted plants have a smaller base, they dry out more quickly, so you may be watering them at least every other day simply to keep them alive, and whereas plants in the ground don't need quite that much. But at any rate, number one, don't water when the sun is blasting in midday or, you know, later in the afternoon. It could burn the leaves if you have water spots on there. Not all the time, but it could on some tender things. But your best bet, of course, is early morning watering or just before dark or after dark. You know, if you got a porch light out there, you stick it out and put it on and water everything. And that's going to ensure no leaf damage, and it's also going to ensure less evaporation than if you did it in the middle of the day. You know, because if you're watering in the middle of the day, especially lawns where you've got a sprinkler system, say, and it's just watering, and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and it's 92 degrees, 50% of that water is being evaporated. It's not even hitting the ground. So, and if you're only, like, watering for 10 minutes, which you should be watering three times that much, there's not much penetrating to your lawn or your shrubs. So keep that in mind in your watering schedule. Make sure you water, like I say, early in the morning or late in the evening, and you're going to get more bang for your buck. You're going to still pay a lot for water, but you're not going to pay as much as if you were to water during the middle of the day.
And you'll get something out of it.
And you actually get something out of it. Now, there are summertime, you still can plant. I mean, you just have to be a little bit careful. And but of course, the best time to plant is, you know, after the heat of the summer is done. Like we get into end of August, maybe a little bit into first part of September. Daytime temps cool down. We might even have a rain, and we might have like fog in the morning and stuff like that. That's a better time to plant. But I know there are serious people out there that are buying flowers. I mean, they come to the nursery and they're buying stuff, and I give them these instructions if I'm standing there, or my staff does, about watering and how much and why not and blah, 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 so that they have a basic understanding of don't water it every day for 5 minutes, because that's the worst thing you can do. But, you know, after the heat of the summer is done, you know, it's a whole lot easier and you have a whole lot more success. You may lose a plant or two in the heat of the summer, and it's not the fault of the place that you bought it from. It wasn't a bad plant. It was maybe you didn't water it quite enough, or the roots dried out a little bit when it was sitting in your yard waiting to be planted. And there's a lot of little things that affect living things there. But like I say, as you get into September, it starts to cool off, and it's just better. And plants are starting into their dormancy at that time because there's less sunlight, less hours of sunlight during the day. And there's less stress to the new plants that you put in if there's less heat, less dryness, that kind of thing. So July, August, and September are really the hot months, and they're really we still can get 90 degrees in September. We can get a week, but then all of a sudden it'll turn around and go, oh no, it's 48 degrees. What happened?
Is that what they call Indian summer?
I don't know.
I can't say that.
Why not? What's wrong with Indian summer? That's what it is.
Well, some people might offend someone.
Well, we're not here to offend. We're here to teach. But if you want to really have some plant materials and you're not sure of how to do all this, hire a professional to plant them, and a professional should know the correct way to do that. Now, there are some shrubs that are going to do better because they're just tough. They're just tougher than nails. And most conifers, which are evergreens like pines, spruces, firs, and all that kind of thing, can be planted pretty successfully in the hot time with no setbacks. Shrubs like Oregon grape, which is our state flower, is a tough plant. It can be planted easily even in 100 degree weather. I wouldn't go out there and pick a 100 degree day to do it, but
maybe harder on you than the plant.
It's harder than on the human than it is on the plant.
Yeah.
And then any kind of a juniper is fair game because they're tough. And then Nandina, it's a nice shrub. And dwarf mugo pine, ornamental grasses. They don't mind the heat, and they're going to do okay in the summer planting. However, there are some caveats that you need to be aware of. I'd be cautious about planting, say, azaleas or hydrangeas or rhododendrons or other flowering-type shrubs because they're more sensitive to the heat. And should they dry out even just a little, there's a detrimental effect to the plant. There's a detrimental effect to the flowers if they happen to be in bloom. But it can be done. But the first time novice may experience a lack of success. I mean, because you don't understand how plants work, how plants function. So consequently, you may neglect the proper way to do this, but not. I know the neglect's not on purpose. It's just for a lack of knowledge.
Yeah, you don't know.
You gotta know. It's real simple. But at any rate, be patient. if you don't want to plant in the summer, just wait till September, October.
There you go.
But yeah. Yeah, but planting in the heat of the summer can be successful. It just takes more time and care, more paying attention. And because, in our business, we're landscaping year-round. We plant all summer simply because of our job scheduling. We got to do it. We would love it if the temperature was in the 70s all the time and it was kind of misty, until about noon with a bunch of clouds and all that. But that doesn't happen in Douglas County. I don't know why. It's like, man. Jeez Louise.
It doesn't even really happen that much on the coast.
No, it doesn't. But, it's when what we do, and that's our process all summer, and even 75 degrees and up, we do this. first, keep the plants wet by watering them prior to planting. In other words, you got 10 plants there, they're still in their pots, and you still got to dig the holes and all that. While they're sitting there in their pots, go ahead and fill the pot up with water. Get that root system nice and soaked. It drains out. It has drain holes and and all that.
Does that kind of give it a head start?
A little bit, but what it doesn't do is set it back. You see, and you just want to keep the equilibrium of the roots and the top in balance. That's mm-hmm. that's the
that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I've only planted 28 billion plants, and I found that after my first 27 billion, I learned something.
Since 1956.
Yeah, 1931, I think. I'm not sure. Oh, gosh. But what we also do is when we're digging our holes that we're going to put this new plant in, we fill the hole with water. Just fill it up. It's empty. The plant's over on the side ready to go. But we fill the hole up with water for several reasons. First, we want to see how quickly the water is going to drain from the hole. Is it fast draining, medium, or is it barely draining and it's, you know, like concrete or solid rock or whatever underneath that? Secondly, the adjacent soil, you know, also absorbs the water so that the sides of the hole are wet as well. In other words, the water goes in the hole and it goes down, but also the sides of also absorb like a sponge. It's just sucking water. Okay. So that's a good thing, because when you put the plant in, finally, and then you water the plant mm-hmm. in the spot, it there's moisture all the way around. Because if it's dry on the sides and you don't put water in the hole, whatever little water you actually put on the plant after you plant it, right, gets sucked up by the dryness, you know,
mm-hmm.
like the sponge effect.
It's absorbed.
Yeah, you just put a sponge beside a little spilled water. Guess what? Well, that's the same way with the dry soil.
Yeah.
Same principle. So that's the deal. And then you plant your plant, and after planting your shrub or your tree, soak it once again. Just soak the whole thing, and this is not over water this time of year, okay? Because that ground is dry, dry, dry. And if you have some vitamin B1, and we use vitamin B1 all the time on everything we plant, whether it's at the nursery or in somebody's yard or somebody's business, whatever. And vitamin B1 is a yucca extract type of material that enhances root growth. It kind of jacks it up a little bit, and also takes away any transplant shock that maybe you made a mistake and let the plant dry out. Well, once it's in the ground and you add the vitamin B1, it kind of energizes and gets it going.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I believe in that so strongly uh-huh. is way back when I was first starting landscaping, I went up to the dump off of McLean Street. Mm-hmm. It was called the dump.
It was.
You know, you just drove up there.
Still is to me.
Well, yeah, true, but it's not the landfill. But you'd back up to a log. They had a canyon there, a big hole,
mm-hmm.
and you backed up to the logs and you threw your trash down into the hole,
and
right?
You're done.
Yeah. Well, one day I was unloading some brush in there, and I'm in the back of my pickup, and I'm looking down into the trash heap,
mm-hmm.
and I saw three bare root flowering cherries laying there with the roots bare laying. Mm. Somebody threw three good trees away.
Oh,
and I
geez.
Thought, what are they, nuts? And of course, back in the day, you could go down and pick stuff out of the dump. Nobody would arrest you, right?
Right.
Yeah. So after I unloaded my truck, I went down there and I got those three flowering cherries and I put them in the back of my rig and took them home.
Uh-huh.
And I planted two of them at my house and one up at my mom's house, which was a half a block above me. And I had, you know, I was just starting with this B1 stuff. I was just learning about it. This mm-hmm. is back in like 75 or something like that. And so the directions said 2 tablespoons per gallon. So I gave it 3 good glugs into a gallon of water. And that's what I watered these bare root trees in. And I put them in pure bark mulch, no soil. And just watered them real heavy after they were in the ground. And they were bare. The roots were bare and the limbs were bare. But I saw little buds on the limbs, little tiny bumps. And I thought, well, we'll see. And like clockwork, once a week I went out there and I gave it vitamin B1. And I did the same to my mom's. Within, about 3 weeks, I came home. I'd inspect them every night. And these little bumps had elongated, and they were, and I went, wow, there is life there. So I just kept pumping the B1 to it.
Yeah.
Within another couple of 3 weeks, I actually had branches, little tiny branches coming out. And then shortly after that, maybe another 2 weeks, leaves. And I thought, aha. And so this was like the end of May when I I planted them, and it was like 80 degrees then, mm-hmm. and laying in that sun, I thought they were deader than a doornail. and here it is July, and I've got leaves and I've got branches on that thing, and I have to credit it to the vitamin B1. So
yeah,
it made me a believer right off the bat. Do we have a break?
We do.
I knew that. I could tell. I could sense it.
From cherry trees to what's next?
I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet. We'll find out.
We'll find out. A couple of minutes, and we'll be right back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we're back. I believe it's still around 90 degrees or so yet.
Well, shoot. I love 90s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway,
I need some of that vitamin B1 today.
Well, I'll bring a jug for you.
Good.
Next Wednesday, I'll bring a jug for you.
Maybe I can sprout out and come alive.
You can just sip it while we're talking.
Yeah.
Hi, Kyle. And at any rate, we're talking about summer planting and how to ensure that you have success in your summer planting. And it's just a few rules and a few things that you have to be aware of to be successful. Don't dig a hole, jam them in dry, and then water them for a couple of 10 seconds and think they're good, because they ain't. I already explained to you what you can do. And like I say, the vitamin B1. prevents shock and promotes rapid root growth, and that's what you want. Now, the new plant is in. You've already watered it with the B1. You've already pre-soaked the hole. You pre-soaked the plant when it was in a pot, so it's going to be good for a few days. You don't have to go out there every day and sock water to it, unless maybe it's a geranium or a petunia or something like that. That's a different story, but I'm talking mainly shrubs and trees when I'm speaking here. Mm. Because that's a whole different ball game on the flowers and that kind of thing. But again, and I've said this 1,000 times, actually feel the soil. Dig down a little bit, 2, 3, 4 inches. And if it's damp, it's okay. Because if it's damp 2 or 3 inches, it's very wet down there at 12 or 18 inches at the bottom of the hole. So you're good to go. Because that moisture, which is near the surface, has a tendency to evaporate because of the sun, blah, 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 and it's shining on it. So your new plants, your trees, your shrubs, you may only be watering them once a week. But when you do water them once a week, you give them a deep soak so that they're thoroughly wet. But that doesn't mean you're overwatering. Now, if you gave them a deep soak every day, yeah, you're going to kill them in about 7 to 10 days.
Oh, geez.
And especially stuff like Japanese maples or shrubs that flower. And the biggest indicator of overwatering is on a newly planted shrub or tree. If the edges of the leaves start to brown up and get crispy, that is, you know, a lot of people think, wow, it needs more water. Just the opposite is true. You need to stop watering. Let it go. Let it dry out a little bit. And like I say, if the leaves are crispy and brown and kind of looks like your first inclination is, oh, it needs water. It's the wrong inclination. Ignore it. Leave them alone. Check the soil.
Fight the feeling.
Yeah, fight the feeling. You know, but all these things that we have learned and methods that we have learned over the years, excuse me, has been, you know, basically trial and error. I've made a lot of errors when I first started.
You have?
Oh, yeah, three of them. Number one, I kept working.
Yeah, I didn't learn how to get rich.
There was no lottery at that time. But, you know, trial and error is the best teacher. If you do mess up and overwater a plant and everything, it's not the nursery's fault that died. It's the fault of your overwatering. Be cautious. You can always add water, but once it's in there, you can't take it back out. So you use discretion and be kind of, what do I want to say? What's the word? Don't do it too much.
Overuse?
Well,
no, that's not.
I was stingy. That's the word.
Yeah.
Be stingy.
Just the opposite.
Just be stingy with your water.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I've already made all these mistakes, and you don't have to make them if you're listening. And, you know,
it's, pay attention.
Pay attention. I mean, I'm not just sitting here for my health, you know.
And looking at me.
Yeah, looking at him. Good thing I have some iced tea.
Yeah.
But here's a short list. I got a few short lists, a lot of short lists, but of tough plants that are almost indestructible for hot summer planting. Now, there's a lot of, I'm just going to give you basics, others that will work. But when I'm asked for like low maintenance landscaping, these are the types of plants that quickly come to mind. Somebody says, well, gee whiz, I'm using too much water on my lawn. Let's take the lawn out. I want to have just bark and some rocks and a dry riverbed and some really cool plants and blah blah blah. And I said that's not a problem. We can do that. So one of the plants at the top of the list are ornamental grasses. they are just drought tolerant. 99 times out of 100, a deer won't eat them, which is a really good sign here in Douglas County. And they're colorful. They look good, and they're just almost indestructible. You know, when we had the Snowmageddon, you know, what, 2 years ago now almost, I thought a lot of them would, bite the dust, but they didn't. They looked a little ragged for a while, but as soon as spring came along, they sprouted new growth. So the root systems weren't not damaged by the cold. It was just the tops. It was just the leaves themselves that that were damaged there. But they're just a good plant. And once they become established, they don't even need us. Just look at them and enjoy them. You know, and number one on that list, and this is not for a small yard, is a pampas grass. That's pampas grass, you know, grows really large, and it's going to be there forever. Once you plant one, it's hard to get rid of them. So you got to make sure you have a lot of room for it to spread. You got to make sure that you're not putting it next to your garage or next to your front entry or something like that, because in a few years, you won't be even get in the front door or park your car in the garage if you do that. So give it a lot of room. In other words, don't plant it next to any building, not a fence, a garage, a home, a sidewalk, a driveway. don't do that. It gets quite big. I saw one in Camas Valley. I had a home in Camas, and the lady was a little, she wanted to take it down and trim it. Well, this thing must have been from outside edge to outside edge. It was probably 15 feet around and at least 10 feet tall. One pampas grass. And I thought, what in the world? And she said, well, it's been in there for, I don't know, she said 12 or 15 years or something like that. Obviously, it was the perfect spot because this puppy was a giant. I've never seen one that big up to that point, and I've never seen one that big since I saw that one. So it's like it's a forever plant. So have a lot of room for it to spread, and you'll be good. You know, but if you have like a long steep bank, not, you know, something you can actually walk on, or just a large yard, they can be just the ticket because they're pretty, they're evergreen, they're tough, they flower. You know, there's a lot of positive things about it. They're deer proof. And they're people-proof, and nobody can steal one because, I'll tell you about it in a minute, but they make a great screening shrub for privacy and protection because of their ultimate size. And if you had a, oh gosh, a big yard and you're in a neighborhood where everybody has maybe a half an acre or an acre or something like that, and out in the boondocks a ways, and you want some privacy and you want to put this along your property line, yeah, it would work. Because you're not hurting anything. You're not hurting your neighbor. You're not hurting your own yard, your own landscape. But they, like I say, they're deer proof and they're people proof. They make a great screening shrub. Remember that. But for privacy, like I said, they can get 10 feet wide and 7, 8 feet tall.
Wow.
That's just an average. I've seen them bigger, and they're just they just go. And for protection, think about this. The leaves are razor sharp.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. You grab a leaf and pull.
Oh.
And you're going to come up with some cuts in your hand. That's all there is to it.
No wonder the deer leave it alone.
Yeah, right. They don't want to mess with this thing. They cut their tongue off or something.
Yeah.
And so anybody trying to walk through them, you know, to kind of check your yard out or something like that, they would suffer many cuts. So it's a good protective plant as well. But like I say, they have a beautiful white plume as they flower, very, very, some of the flowers can be, you know, 18 inches, 24 inches long, and 6-7 inches in diameter, and they bloom for months when they start coming.
Nice.
Yeah, they are, and they just do, and you have to really want them, because once they're established, they're very hard to get rid of.
They keep expanding.
Oh yeah. They just, you know, they don't spread by roots or anything, but the plant that you plant just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and rounder and bigger and taller. And
wow.
Hey, you know, if it's in good ground, it's going to do it twice as fast.
It loves it.
Yeah. And some folks say, well, if it gets too big, I'll just cut it down. Well, let me tell you, you can cut them down to the ground, and they'll grow back very quickly.
Like a rose bush.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Worse than a rose bush. And you can burn them with diesel or gas down into the roots, and they grow back greener and more vibrant.
Are you serious?
I'm serious, because I gave this advice to a homeowner years and years ago, and I thought,
no.
Well, that'll kill it.
Yeah.
You know, I've tried this. So this guy lived up in Ridgewood out there by the country club, and from the highway, you could look up and see his row of pampas grass along the fence, his property line. He had a couple, 3 acres. And he says, yeah, they're just getting out of hand, and I don't know how to kill them. And I said, well, just cut them down. And then when you cut them down, just take some diesel, pour it all over it, and light them on fire. He's okay. He's, that'll do it. I said, oh, yeah, no problem. Well, that seemed logical to me, right? So one day.
Fire destroys everything.
Yeah, right. So one day shortly after that, I was going out by his place, and it was like October, November, and they were on fire. The flames were, you know, 8-10 feet in the air. He had cut them down, poured a bunch of diesel in each one of those, and then lit them up. And there was, 15 of them. So there was 15 individual fires all the way down his fence line. And I thought,
like,
hey.
The Iraqi oil fields.
Yeah, exactly. Just like that. And I thought, good, he took my advice, you know, so we took care of that problem. It was several months later, he came back into the nursery, and he said, it didn't work. I said, what didn't work? He says, they've grown back. I said, what are you talking about? You burned them. I saw the flames.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, I burned them down about a foot under the ground, you know, the burn, and I burned them really well. And he said, they're greener and growing faster than I ever saw in the first place. And so I had to go take a look. I said, I got to see this, man.
Right.
And he was right. I mean, they were gorgeous. They were about, you know, the new leaves were like 3 or 4 feet tall, and they were just
happy.
Happy, yeah. Yeah, they thought, man, thanks for the burn job. I like that. That helped me out a bunch.
Got an
man.
Overhaul.
Yeah. So I know that doesn't work. So his next option was getting a backhoe in there and actually backhoeing. I was trying to get him through on the cheap. You know, well, you can do this yourself, and it's not a lot of dollars. You know, it's just your time and a little bit of diesel. Well, he had to get a backhoe in there, and And it took a day for the backhoe to dig them all out and put them in a dump truck and haul them away. You know, so there's a $500-$600 bill or $700 bill, even back in those days. And that's the only way you could get rid of them.
That did it.
All right.
Want a phone call?
Okay, we got a phone call.
We have a phone call. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike.
Hey, Mike, it's John.
Yes, John.
How are you?
Good.
I was down on the Pampas in Argentina one time, and the way they used to, I'm not telling you a lie, what they used to do down there, and they probably changed the whole method, but they would set the entire, they call it the Pampas. It's this big giant plain
that's
covered with grass, but it's also covered with Pampas grass.
Yep.
And so it's got these big old clumps just going as far as you can see. They light that on fire, describing like what you said that fellow did, and that thing lights off like it's an atomic bomb. Just absolutely amazing.
Wow.
Heat and smoke and all that. What I was calling to ask you, have you ever seen passion fruit?
Yeah, I have seen
passion fruit. Do you remember before Hotel 6, Motel 6, over there at the end of the airport, there was when that was coming in, there was a little mobile home village right there at the corner of that property. And there was a fella that had a mobile home, and he had a passion fruit set of vines on and it completely covered that mobile home.
Yeah.
And that fruit was I stopped by that when I looked close and I saw all these passion fruit. I'd never seen the plant before. and he's talking. He says, "What do you think? Pretty good, huh?" I said, "Are you kidding?"
Yeah.
And he says, "Go ahead and pick some." And I stuck them in my old mouth and I said, "Oh my goodness."
Yeah, good stuff, huh?
Well, I just didn't realize, you know, that Mr. Myers and all the rest of the old timers around here knew to grow that we had such a fertile, verdant Eden and the right temperature for everything. And I mean, I've seen that stuff over in Hawaii, but by golly, it was growing like gangbusters here.
Yeah. And I got a client that has a dwarf Meyer lemon tree that he planted in his ground outside, and it's not outside plant during the winter. But
you've talked about this. I've loved this story.
Yeah, and it's 8 feet tall and 8 feet around and is full of lemons. And he built kind of a part-time greenhouse.
Surround.
And then he just takes the windows off the greenhouse during the summer, and then when it gets cold in the winter, he just slides the plexiglass windows back in and turns a light bulb on, and it grows.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that just something?
Yeah.
Do you know the old French term cloche? C-L-O-C-H-E?
No.
It's what I have done with fruit trees in this area that shouldn't, like peaches, to get the curl so bad.
Yeah.
It's a surround. It's kind of like building a clothesline, kind of. It's a way to trellis it, and it's also a way to cover it with. And I use clear plastic, and all my peaches, I never had to ever spray them.
Yeah.
They never got the curly leaf, but I grew them down out of Daystrick and down out of Medford. There's guys that have got acres and acres of them under cloche, and they're just covering them with the clear plastic, and they never have to spray them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a doggone thing. Anyway, thank you so much for the stewardship and the wonderful words you share.
Well, you're sure welcome. Thank you for calling.
You've always been my hero.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care of yourself.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's a good time for a break.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. A couple of more minutes here with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show.
You don't want any, you don't want to cut off any compliments that somebody actually gives you, you know?
No, those are hard to come by.
They are really hard to come by.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oh, we do have our fun, don't we?
Oh, yeah, I enjoy the show. I don't know. Good thing people can't hear us between breaks.
Between breaks, yeah. All right. The lines are open, by the way. What's the number?
Well, I don't know. 673-4464 just kind of popped in my mind.
You got it.
Yeah. So thank you for the calls. If you got something, ask. It's okay. Now, I was talking about the pampas grass, the giant pampas grass. It's, you know, a grass that's, really tough, et cetera. And the other end of the spectrum is one of my favorites. It's called Mondo grass. This is a dwarf grass. It's black, or the leaves are black or very deep, deep green in color. And it only grows about 6 or 8 inches tall.
Oh, is that right?
Versus 8 or 10 feet tall.
The pampas.
And the pampas grass.
Oh, pampas.
Pampas, who knows? Depends on what country you're from. And they grow about a foot wide. And the reason I like them is because they're very showy. You know, they're like I say, dark leaves.
Huh.
And sometimes if the sun hits them just right, the leaves look black, just as black as these microphones that we're speaking into.
Nice.
And it's very slow growing. Mm. And it's a perfect ground cover, like in a rock garden or by a waterfall, if you got one of the waterfall features in your yard and you're looking for little plants to put around the rocks. This is a great plant to use. Mm-hmm. And again, it's tough. I was somewhere, and I can't remember, here in the last week, I saw a yard that had, oh gosh, a whole section of this black Mondo grass, and I was going by at 35 or 40 miles an hour, so I couldn't slam on the brakes. But it was beautiful, and it had some big old rocks in there, and you know, simple, easy landscaping. You don't mess with it, you don't prune it, you don't water it, you don't do anything to it.
Takes care of itself.
It takes care of itself. You just look at it, you know.
Nice.
Really, really pretty. And it's very slow growing, and it's like a perfect ground cover, like I say, you know, in around rocks or waterfalls or that kind of thing, or in a small planting bed, like you got a little planting bed along the front of your house that's, you know, 2 feet wide, and you want to put something in there. Mm. This would be a perfect plant to put in, because it's not going to outgrow that spot, and it's always going to look good. Winter, summer, it doesn't matter.
Good filler.
Yeah. And you can take full sun, it can take shade.
Wow.
In the shade, it doesn't grow as quickly or as much, but in the sun doesn't hurt it at all. I mean, ours that we've got planted around are in full sun there at the nursery, and it just looks good all the time. It's easy. That's the kind of stuff
nice.
You want. You don't have to even water the stinking thing at all if you don't want to.
That's my kind of a landscape.
Yeah, and it's they're very decorative. And there are a lot of choices in between these two extremes, you know, from the pampas grass to the Mondo grass. Some of the grasses, and I was looking at one of my sources, and they had, you know, a whole variety of things there. Some of them I didn't even know what they were talking about. But we have about 10 varieties on sale all the time out there at the nursery. And some of these are gold and light green in color, the leaves are. Very, very showy. They would be look like if you took some golden type leafed dwarf grasses and mixed them in with the Mondo grass, you'd have a really beautiful contrast.
And
again, they all take the same care. No care, basically.
If
you water them, a couple times a month in the summer, they're good to go. You know, that's how they are.
Nice.
And I've got some planted around at my place too, and they just do a good thing. Well, these golden green ones light green ones I was talking about, they get about a foot tall, but they'll spread about 3 feet over time. It's not like an instantaneous thing. These grasses grow slowly. Unlike the pampas grass that seems to shoot for the moon the first year.
You can't get rid of it.
these guys are rather slow. And like I say, when you do the two opposite colors, if you will, when you plant them together in the same landscape bed, you've really got a pretty show there. It's an easy thing. And anybody that sees it goes, wow, that is so cool. You know, how do you do that? What are the names of that? Now, there's another one that I like. It's called blue oat grass, and I like to use that in landscapes. The stems, or the blades, if you will, are blue. It's blue, light blue, and it grows up to about 4 feet tall. Has And when it flowers, it's topped with little white feathery flowers. Really, again, a really attractive plant. And, and it'll get, oh gosh, over time, over, you know, 15 years or whatever, they might get about 2 feet in diameter, you know, from leaf to leaf, that kind of thing.
It's manageable.
Yeah, very manageable. And you can prune these guys down every year if you want. And the cool thing about grasses is if you want to, you got some grasses there and they're getting kind of big, and you want some of the same ones in another part of your yard, you go along in November, December, or whatever, when it's really cold and they're dormant, take a sharp shovel and just slice down into there and get a handful of roots, and they'll be tight. They won't be real loose. They'll be tight, and you can just take those cuttings or those samples and plant them, you know, around, and they'll all grow. That's how we grow all our grasses at the nursery. We put them in the greenhouse in the winter, and take them and from a 2 gallon size grass, you can make 10 little babies out of that, and by the time the next spring rolls around, they're ready to go.
Ready to
go outside. So
we better take our last break.
We got a break.
Yep.
Gosh, these breaks.
We went kind of long in the last.
We did, huh? Oh man.
All right, we'll be right back once again with more Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on the other side.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, here we are. It's the home stretch, as they say.
Home stretch. Well, I've been talking about plants that you can safely plant in the summer and how to water them and make sure that they survive in the summer.
And some with very little care.
And some, a lot of them with very little care. So, and I just got through with like three of my favorite or four of my favorite little grasses, one large and several smaller than the giant one. But everybody knows what a juniper is, but few people know how many varieties that really exist. In my research, I was looking up the varieties, and this is a list. This is a list that was 4 pages long, and I counted 80 varieties. 80 varieties of juniper.
Wow.
And they go from, you know, the stuff that just lays on the ground, hugs the ground, to giant trees, you know. So, and these are the ground cover types. I'll talk about the juniper shrubs and the juniper trees probably probably next week, because it was very interesting, the stuff I was reading about. And people don't understand how nice they are and how easy they are to grow and how beautiful they look and add to the landscape. Mm. But I'm talking about the juniper, the spreading juniper right now. They come in all sizes and all colors. It's amazing. And they'll grow in any soil. I mean, you can just put them in the mud and they seem to grow. I wouldn't do that, but, you know, they seem to grow. And, of course, the only thing that kills them is overwatering. You're getting tired of hearing that stuff. But there are ground cover types, which what means ground cover types. Yeah, get about 4 inches tall, about 4 inches up to about a foot tall. Hmm. That's called a ground cover type juniper. And of those ground cover types, I like there's one called shore juniper, and it has a bright light green to gold foliage. Very showy, again, in a rock garden or in a small bed. Doesn't grow fast and take over like these tam junipers that you see all over the place that are choking houses out. It always looks good. It's just easy to take care of. And you can plant it safely in the summer. Now, some that I don't like or even sell at the nursery, one is called Bar Harbor. It's a ground cover type, but it gets dead spots in it very easily. I think it's a problem with no air circulation because it's one of those, again, lays flat on the ground. Mm-hmm. And another one is Blue Chip, and there's another one called Blue Rug. And they have a blue tinge to them, more blue than green, and they are decorative. Now, when you plant them on the ground, it just seems that the air circulation is poor or whatever, but after a while, they get the dead spots in them. And people think they're going to recoup, but they don't, so you gotta do some manicuring, light pruning, and things like that. But I found the best way to use these, in case if that's what you like it, so you want to buy them, is like if you plant them behind a retaining wall or a rock wall and let them hang over the wall, they do great because there's more air circulation. Mm-hmm. I think it's an air circulation kind of problem to begin with. They got to breathe. Because, you know, you get bugs in there, you get swamp rats, mm-hmm. you get all that kind of stuff, fungus. And I think that has a real detrimental effect on them. Mm. Whereas the shore juniper, it's a little bit higher and it's a little bit more airy. It doesn't lay just flat dead on the ground, but it's, like I say, about 4 inches up off the ground. And it grows very nicely. And it's a whole different ball. When you see a shore juniper next to a blue carpet juniper or a Bar Harbor juniper, you go, oh, yeah, I want the shore juniper because it just looks nicer. It just looks easier to do. And then when you get into the larger junipers, those that get, say, 3 feet tall by 8 feet wide, my favorite there is the Gold Coast Gold Coast is the best. I like that because of its color. The new growth is bright gold in color, and then the older stems in the foliage from, you know, last year or the year before, they're kind of a light green. They're not a deep green. And I've got several landscapes that have them out in Melrose. I planted a guy's bank with them. I think we put 100 of them in or something like that. Jeez. Pretty long bank and, you know, it's probably 40 feet wide and 100 feet long. So 100 of them, you know, we put them on like 8-foot centers, you know, the center of one plant to the next is 8 feet. So then you triangulate the next row. So you fill the gap, see.
Yeah.
And that was about, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And they're looking really great. You can see them from the road and they just do good. And again, they're a no-care plant. But they're pretty. They look good. And they're bright, they're colorful. They're just not, you know, deep green is fine, but if you put too many of those deep greens in, it's just kind of dull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are mundane.
You're looking at me like it's time to...
It is time to go.
Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Once again, where are you located in Winston, Mike?
Well, we're about half a mile south of the South Umpqua River on Highway 99 with a bunch of green roofs. You can't miss us. And we got the best plants in Douglas County, and we grow a lot of them ourselves. So stop by and say hi.
And cash is still king.
Cash is always king. And gold doubloons and silver ingots, too.
All right. Have a good week, Mike.
Thank you.